Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, episode 58. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Free the Sword and The Step Back. On today's show, we're joined again by Jared Dubin, the host of Locked On Knicks, and a writer for such as The Step Back and Vice Sports, to re-up the Cavs' Knicks season opener in a little bit more detail than what we did on the straight up recap show that we did. And then on the second half of the show, I'll be taking your questions, as always, in our weekly mailbag show. Again, if you want to submit questions for next week's mailbag, please shoot me an email at lockdowncavs@gmail.com or send me a tweet to lockdowncavs@gmail.com and submit your questions there. Before we get into our conversation with Jared, just going to give you guys a quick word from today's sponsor, betdsi.com. Do you love basketball? And are you ready to get into the action? Then you need to check out BetDSI.com. This is a company that has over 20 years in the business. They're a top-rated business. It's safe. There are going to be no issues when you play there. I've bet there a couple times, have had no issues, and it's always been a clean and easy experience. Right now, BetDSI has a great basketball special. If you sign up today and use the promo code Cavaliers10, you get $10 free to try their service. BetDSI is also offering a 100% bonus on your first deposit. They have great customer service, so if you have any questions about BetDSI, they'll be able to answer them quick and prompt. Payment is also fast and easy, and you can basically bet on anything you want at BetDSI.com. There are hundreds of football games, basketball wagers to choose from. You can bet on the UFC, the election. If there's something big going on, you can bet on it. And they also even offer in-game wagering on football, basketball, and other major sporting events if that's something you're interested in. Again, anything you want to play, you can play at BetDSI.com. So again, go to BetDSI.com right now. That's BetDSI.com. Use the promo code Cavaliers10 and get your first wager free and start winning today.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Chris, how are you, my man? How's everything going?
Doing good. Ready to recap the season over for both the teams.
Yeah, well, slightly more enjoyable night for people in Cleveland than people in New York. How was your night out there with everything going on with the Cavs and the Indians? What was that experience like being down there?
It was nuts. I mean, I've been downtown for the couple of the things that have happened in Cleveland the past few months, and they've all been sort of crazy, but this felt very different. Even just talking to some fans that were there, there were people that were, you know, had Indians and Cavs gear on. There was one woman that I talked to that had this had to be so expensive, but she cut a Francisco Lindor jersey and a LeBron black sleeve jersey in half and sewed them together into one jersey.
Why would you ever get a LeBron sleeve jersey?
Like, I don't know.
It's bad enough that the players have to wear them. Now you got fans wearing them too.
Yeah, they look like T-shirts though, I guess, and I feel like that makes it. And then now they have these nice championship patches on them that you can buy in the concourse. So I don't know, but it was nuts. I mean, I got right downtown. I don't know if you saw the Undertaker was there, and that happened.
That was wild.
As I'm walking around the arena, you know, Wiz Khalifa was there, like just kind of rolling around. Where I was sitting in the media row in the bottom for a little bit at halftime, Stephen A. Smith is just sitting there on his phone, like not really watching the game, just kind of chilling. You saw CSI Cyberstar Bow Wow, who is like the tiniest human being I've ever seen in my life. Khloe Kardashian was in fact there. There was a lot of just random celebrity sightings, which is crazy. But the ring ceremony itself and everything was unbelievable. I mean, as someone who grew up in Cleveland, it was really kind of nuts to process that. The crowd reacted to the LeBron's block and Kyrie's shot and Kevin Love's stop almost like I imagine they did on Game 7, which is crazy. And after the game, which I think was the coolest thing the Cavs could have done, because they, instead of playing the game in halftime, they had Flo Rida perform. After the game, they let fans stay, and the Cleveland has a very huge jumbotron, or kind of just a with a bunch of screens on it in the middle of the court, above the middle of the court. And they let fans stay for a while and watch the Indians game.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a seamlessly transition into it. Just one of the crazy nights in Cleveland. There's so many people. And Tyronn Lue in his postgame admitted that he was keeping an eye on the score during the game, and I think they're all very aware of what was going on. So that it was just kind of a very cool night, and I think a lot of people already consider it maybe, I don't think it's the best night in Cleveland sports history, but it's definitely maybe top five, or it's probably top three.
Yeah, I would imagine that like the night they actually won was better. Like, this is just like, okay, you're commemorating it. Like, yeah. The night they won, I would imagine, obviously, it was better. Like, that's the memory. Like, and you're already memorializing it, you know, what, 4 months later. But, I mean, we talked before the game about, you know, the possibility that the emotion would maybe throw them off their game a little bit. That did not happen. Other than the fact that they missed a bunch of threes they normally make in the first half, they pretty handily controlled the entire game against the Knicks. Like, the Knicks made a small run to come back in the second quarter, but once Cleveland started making their threes that they were pretty wide open most of the night, they pulled away again. Like, I thought it was a little bit strange that, you know, the Cavs opened up a double-digit lead early, and then once the Knicks pulled closer, I thought it was going to wind up being a close game, because usually when you see a team go down and then come all the way back, usually it'll go like back and forth or something for the rest of the way. That did not happen. Cleveland pretty early in that third quarter started to pull away again.
Yeah, it was interesting because, I mean, it only took LeBron, it was under 2 minutes when LeBron did the first thing of the season where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he just did that, when he hit J.R. Smith with that pass from the elbow.
It was 1:59 into the season, I wrote it.
Just incredibly, like, a lot quicker than I expected. And the Cavs generally, I think, they did some things early that I didn't expect them to do, at least now. They went right to that LeBron-Kyrie pick and roll at least a little bit.
Yep.
Which I didn't think they would do, because that's a very playoff tweak. But they hunted down Rose. And I think they did some things differently. I mean,
well,
Love
not
was
just
a little more.
Rose. They got Carmelo guarding Kyrie a few times.
Yeah, it is. They went to Love a little bit more than I expected they would early, which was kind of a nice change from what we've seen the past couple of years.
Love was really good, too, in the game. He didn't shoot from the field that well, but he got to the line a bunch. He beat a bunch of closeouts. You know, we talked in the podcast before the game about how last year Kristaps struggled guarding players like Love who were big guys that played on the perimeter, either giving up threes or giving up, you know, pump fake and drives, and Love hit him with that two or three times throughout the game too.
Yeah. I mean, there was the time he took Kristaps off the dribble, and I was like, oh wow, that like worked out exactly how Jared and I had kind of figured it might. I mean, he did look really good. And it was nuts because when I was watching the game live, because of what LeBron was doing and because of how Kyrie went on that crazy third quarter burst, I kind of didn't realize exactly how well he was playing until I looked at the stats, and then I watched some of the game again this morning and kind of watched some of what he did, and he played really, really well. And it was just like everyone except Amon Shumpert played really well last night for Cleveland.
Yeah, and Shumpert, I mean, part of that is because he didn't get a chance to rebound from the slow start because he ran into Kristaps' hip. Like, first of all, that shows you how tall Kristaps is. Like, Shumpert is, what, like 6'6", and his head hit Kristaps' hip on a drive.
Yeah. Standing next to Kristaps was the biggest human I think I've ever stood next to.
I told you, man, he's got to be bigger than 7'3".
Yeah, has to be.
Like, he's so big. He got a tip in early on and then was only 4 of 12 on his actual shots the rest of the game, 3 of 5 from 3 and 1 of 7 on his regular two-point shots. A lot of complaining from Knicks fans on Twitter during the game that he was not being found within the rhythm of the offense. They found him on back-to-back pick-and-pop jumpers, I think, in the second quarter, possibly the third, if I'm... in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And other than that, he was kind of relatively uninvolved. That was a bit surprising to me. Or not so much surprising as disappointing.
Yeah, I think if you're a Knicks fan, I think that was the one thing that surprised me the most, was that you didn't see as much of him as you would have liked. Because, I mean, Carmelo was kind of was fairly aggressive. Rose did was trying to be aggressive at times, although I didn't think he played particularly well. And it was sort of a night where I wanted to see more of Kristaps, but it just, for whatever reason, I'm not really quite sure why it didn't work out that way, but you would think maybe it was just an opening night thing.
I would say that I'm not necessarily surprised about it, because Rose and Carmelo are guys that already can create their own shots from themselves. You throw them the ball and they can go get a shot for themselves. And Kristaps is not necessarily a guy you're just going to throw him the ball and say, go get yourself a shot. He, a lot of times he needs somebody to create the look for him. And because he played, you know, a lot of his minutes with Rose, and they haven't played together really at all yet.
That's true.
They very much did not have cohesion. And that was true of Rose with pretty much everybody on the court.
Yeah,
when he was searching for his own offense, he was able to get to the rim. He didn't necessarily finish well there. I think he was only 4 of 8 in the restricted area, and I believe he made his first two there. So, you know, throughout the rest of the game, he did not finish well really at all. But the most noticeable thing to me was, you know, the turnovers. When he would try to turn the corner and throw a pass to somebody, there was really no rhythm in that way at all. He finished the game with only 1 assist. Anytime that he was looking for somebody else's offense, it was not there, and you could tell that they really hadn't played together at all. And that's the thing about Rose is, you know, I think he's a good passer when he's looking for the pass, like before he starts on his drive. But once he puts his head down and starts driving to the basket, he's going all the way to the basket. He's not going to be a guy that's going to at the last minute find a lob or at the last minute dump it off to somebody near the basket. If he's going, he's going, and he's going to try to score by himself. And it seemed very much like the Cavs were okay with that.
Yeah, I think, and I think too, it's worth noting that when you think of how the Knicks are built, or if you're building, let's say, down the road around Kristaps, right now, when you have Rose and Carmelo on the floor at the same time with him, those are two guys, by just the virtue of how they play basketball, are going to just eat up possessions because of how they play. Their usage rates are going to be pretty high. They're going to shoot a lot. They're going to try to do a lot. I mean, Rose, 17 shots, Carmelo, 18 shots, and they both played less minutes than Kristaps, who had 13 shots, and that's maybe just the nature of the beast. Maybe that's something to sort of watch him and see how that kind of, that little micro transgression there, or not transgression, but just how that plays out is maybe something kind of interesting.
Yeah, and look, Carmelo early in the game was cooking. I think he started 5 of 7. I know him and Rose combined started 10 of 16, and then they finished combined 15 of 35. So, you know, they were only 5 of 19 the rest of the way. And, like, if Carmelo didn't go on that hot stretch early in the game, the Cavs really might have blown the doors off right from the start, because they were up 10 pretty early on. The Knicks started the second quarter with an all-bench lineup against a lineup with both LeBron and Kyrie, which I was very surprised by. You know, they very quickly brought Kristaps back in when it looked like that may I think they only got outscored by like 2 points in 2 minutes when they had that group out there. But if they had left it out there for much longer, the doors might have really gotten blown off. And, you know, they did go on that run in the second quarter when they basically had the starters with Justin Holiday in for Courtney Lee, who really didn't play well at all. That was disappointing. But other than that one stretch where they came back a little bit in the second quarter and cut the lead to 3, it was pretty much the Cavs were getting whatever shot they wanted, whether it was through LeBron picking out shooters on the perimeter, and he even like admonished Justin Holiday for helping too far off J.R. Smith at one point. You saw that on the TNT broadcast. You know, whether it was that or just Kyrie in isolation, you know, not even so much pick and roll, just isolation and breaking down his man off the dribble, which again we talked about in the preview podcast, like, the Knicks had nobody at all that had any hope of keeping him from getting where he wanted to go. You know, so the Cavs, again, they got pretty much any shot they wanted, and the Knicks, I don't know if they necessarily struggled to find shots, but they certainly struggled to make shots.
Yeah, I think the making shots thing makes more sense to me, because I did think there were moments where they did get the type of looks you think you'd want against the Cavs defense. Courtney Lee had a few moments where he looked like he was going to have space. One time it was LeBron suckering him into going at the rim. But, you know, they had moments where they were getting their spots. Carmelo in particular, it wasn't one of those games where I felt like Carmelo was taking a lot of just bad shots. I felt like he was taking shots relatively in the flow of the game, doing sort of Carmelo things where he normally is going to hit his spots. Maybe it's just an off night. Maybe it's a little bit of the Cavs just kind of, just the way they played, the Cavs were just clearly going to probably be superior. I mean, when LeBron is just kind of doing whatever he wants, and he doesn't even hit a three last night, and the Knicks were sagging off him, which I think was telling, but he has 19 points, 14 assists, 11 rebounds.
He has a block. I don't think he hit a shot outside the paint.
No, I don't think he did either. I think maybe he hit one at the elbow, but I'd have to check the shot chart. But just a very little downhill game for LeBron. Six dunks, which is one short of his career high, by the way.
And that was a thing last year where people were saying, LeBron doesn't dunk anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because he did just kind of make it a point to be very athletic. And I don't mean that in the sense that he was just trying to show off, but the way he was playing was, okay, I'm not going to try to finesse this. I'm just going to be a hammer, and I'm going to dunk. I'm going to attack the rim. I'm going to make my presence felt on defense where I need to. And that was just kind of how he approached the game, and then everything else sort of worked off that. Because when I looked at this game for Cleveland, so many times in the past 2 years, I have felt like they are trying to, it felt uncomfortable. It didn't feel organic, and I'm feeling like they're forcing things in what should be a very simple offense. And, you know, there was some talk of maybe Love didn't fit well because LeBron needs to play the four. I felt like last night, even with the two traditional-ish bigs, LeBron playing downhill as much as he did and then Love playing with the bench units, it made everything just feel so smooth in a way I don't know if I'd seen that before in the past years. And it's one game. LeBron's not going to play with that effort every night. But that was, to me, something that really just, if I was going to take anything away from one game so early in the season, for me, that was it.
Yeah, they looked very comfortable, I would say. Offensively, basically whenever they wanted to pick out a shooter on the perimeter, that guy was open. The Knicks very much struggled with their perimeter defense, trying to track whether it was JR or Love or Kyrie or even Channing Frye when they went small with that unit with LeBron at the four and Frye at the five. Pretty much anybody they wanted to find was open at the time that they wanted to find him. And that's one of the ways that you know the Cavs' offense is on rhythm, is when they're finding guys wide open from three. You know, they just didn't make them in the first half. I think they took 21 threes maybe in the first half, if that sounds right.
It's about right, yeah.
And they just didn't make them, which is not something that's going to happen for a long time. And it was a sign that trouble was coming for the Knicks, and then it did.
Yeah, I'll ask you this. One of the things that I think maybe partially resulted in the Knicks ending up on the having no starters in against LeBron and Kyrie was that Kevin Love was the anchor for bench units yesterday. Did you like how that looked for the Cavs?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, and I think that I mentioned it during the game when Charles Barkley was talking at halftime about how the Knicks don't really have somebody that can score on the second unit and sort of carry that group. Rick Carlisle has been doing that with Dirk Nowitzki for years, having him sort of come out of the game 5-6 minutes in and then anchor the second unit, which helps prop up the scoring of groups that don't necessarily have anybody that's going to carry the scoring load, and it allows him to work against backup big men. I said that the Knicks, rather than taking Noah and maybe Kristaps out early on, should do that with Carmelo, because that would give them a guy to really carry the scoring of the second unit who doesn't need somebody to create his looks for him like Kristaps does. Again, you're not going to throw the ball to Kristaps and say, go get me a shot. He's going to be dependent on Brandon Jennings to get him his looks, and that's something that can work occasionally but is not necessarily the most reliable thing in the world. The question is, is Carmelo going to be okay with coming out 6 minutes into first and third quarters? Not because he would think it's a diss or something, but because players get in rhythms. And he's been a guy who plays the entire first and third quarter for his entire career and probably his entire life.
Yeah.
The Cavs doing that, to get back to your question, the Cavs doing that with Kevin Love makes a lot of sense, because when they're in that first group, LeBron and Kyrie are obviously going to be the primary guys, and Love's a little bit of an afterthought, even if he's the guy setting screens. You know, it's going to be those guys either attacking the basket or picking out a shooter on the perimeter. So getting him with that second group allows him to be the focal point, and I thought he did really good work there.
Yeah, and it's a general theme with him this season, I think, but he has just looked so comfortable. Last night, he just looked so comfortable in those units. I have some concerns about it because of the point guard situation, because I think if you're going to use Love as a way to rest LeBron, you need someone to really supplement him at the point guard spot.
Right.
And Shumpert was not at all good when he played last night. And yes, he got hurt. And everything
was coming.
Yeah, honestly. Cavs Twitter and probably Knicks Twitter laughing because this used to be their problem. The moment he dribbled for the first time and he made a mistake, it was like, oh, Shump dribbled. Like, of course that happened.
Right.
It's just predictable with him, and so maybe that to me is, I think we're gonna take away something small. If you're looking at the nitpick of that, I think it maybe is. What do you do about the point guard spot? Because I think a week ago, when I kind of hadn't really considered that this would be something they would do early on, I wasn't too worried about the backup point guard spot. I think if I'm not confident in Shump being able to play that spot. Kayfelder's a rookie, and rookies struggle, especially when you're tiny like he is.
Right.
Maybe that heightens like a need for a backup there, but that's also something that's such a micro thing that you maybe don't need to decide after one game.
Yeah, it's also like you could easily rectify it by, say, just staggering LeBron and Kyrie's minutes a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that one of them is always on the floor.
That's certainly a playoff move.
Right. You know, maybe they wind up going after a veteran point guard at some point. I don't necessarily see it affecting them all that much in the near term.
No.
What did you think, like, was... I know you had certain thoughts about the Knicks coming into the season. Was there anything that you saw about the Knicks that during that game that changed your mind? I mean, to me, it was like they're not as good as the Cavs. We knew that. They're better at certain things. They are as good or worse at certain things. And, you know, getting blown out by Cleveland on ring night doesn't necessarily tell us anything new other than they're not as good at the Cavs, which isn't new anyway.
Yeah, I think the one thing I think about the Knicks after watching them in person is that I do kind of feel a little bit better about what they might be able to be. I thought Noah, I know he wasn't perfect, and he had his kind of some struggles, but he actually looked pretty solid last night, I thought, watching him with Tristan Thompson.
He moved well, which was encouraging to see.
He also, in peak Noah form, I don't know if you saw this, when the ring ceremony was starting, he didn't come off the court because he was finishing free throws, so as the lights are starting to go off, he's still shooting free throws, and you can see one of the ball boys being like, Joakim, you gotta get off the floor, and he just kept shooting free throws, which is, you know, peak Noah, if you know about his very happy relationship with Cleveland. But I liked kind of generally what I saw. I wasn't, you know, I think any team that's going to play against a Cavs team that is playing as well as Cleveland did last night is probably going to struggle. There's only a few teams that are really going to be able to hang with them when they're playing at a high level, especially earlier in the season when everyone is figuring some things out. But I kind of liked just how they looked. They felt like I was watching a team that was more competent than I was watching them last year. I thought Melo looked pretty good. Noah moved well, like you said. Rose, yeah, and I think the Rose thing in particular, I think he's going to be someone we look at so close this year because of who he used to be, because of his contract, and because of just kind of who his perception of him right now. But maybe in a week or two, you look back, and maybe this is just a blip, because if he can get used to playing with Kristaps, playing with Carmelo, and they can figure a way to make that work a little bit better, I'm pretty good with it. And I also kind of enjoyed watching Justin Holiday for the little bit he was in. He only made 2 of 7 of his shots, but he looked like a pretty decent rotation player off the bench.
Yeah, I thought Holiday was good, too. With Rose, I think if people just divorce themselves from the idea that he's ever going to be old Derrick Rose and evaluate his play for what it is, then they'll be more satisfied. Anybody looking for him to be what he was before is just going to wind up being disappointed.
Yeah, you're basically putting unfair expectations on him, like, at this point.
It's also, like, one thing we have to remember about this game was it was basically his first preseason game.
Yes.
Because he played one and then didn't play any of the rest, and I think practiced once or twice before getting back into the game, like the first game of the regular season. That's not a recipe for looking all that good out there. And, you know, that was a large part of the reason I think that he didn't have really any continuity with anybody else on the court. And the only time he looked good was when he was, you know, going one-on-one with his man and attacking the basket. That's the kind of thing that you would hope comes throughout the rest of the season in terms of being able to find guys on the pick and pop or pick out shooters on the weak side, because he'll know where guys like to be and where they like the ball. To me, the big thing is that people have to evaluate his play just on the merits of his play and not, you know, compared to old Derrick Rose. Like, just pretend it's a guy named, like, Derrick Jackson and evaluate him that way.
Yeah. Do you find that Knicks fans do perceive him as still as old Derrick Rose?
Oh, a lot. I mean, they're divided basically into two different groups. There are people that think he's just done and is never going to be anything again. And then there are people that think that he's going to be MVP Derrick Rose again. There's not many people that fall somewhere in between, which is, you know, what I think it is.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable, because I still think, like, the basketball Twitter that you and I sort of live in has moved on from 2000 whatever MVP Derrick Rose. So it's we as a writing community, I guess, to put it in like a very weird way, we have moved on from that reality. But it seems like because of the name, because once you win that award, you're tied to it. There's still probably that perception of him somewhere, and the price tag of his contract probably doesn't help that either.
Yeah, it's also, and we talked about this on the podcast too. The finishing is the big thing, because when he goes to the basket, he's always going to try to score himself. And that finishing has declined so much since the injuries, because he just doesn't athletically have the same burst and ability to. And I talked about this on a podcast with Chris Herring. He's a contortionist at the rim, not somebody that, you know, absorbs contact and finishes through it. He will try to, you know, spin around or avoid the contact in some way and finish that way. And that did not work well for him last night. And that's something that, honestly, like, we should expect to be the case throughout the season. Like, he's not going to suddenly go back to finishing like 60% at the rim again.
Right.
It's been, you know, 4 years since he's been able to do that. He was all the way down at 51% last year. That's just the reality of the kind of player that he is now. And the sooner that people, you know, accept that that's the case, the easier it'll be to take the rest of his play for what it is and be satisfied with certain things and unsatisfied, I think, with others.
Yeah, I think you're hitting it like spot on when you mention it that way.
Yeah, the thing that was extremely unsurprising was that he struggled guarding Kyrie, which nobody can really guard him off the dribble. Like, if you're trying to keep him from getting to his spot, like, good luck. It's that dude, I mean, there are guys that can get off whatever shot they want. There are not many guys that can also make all of those shots, and he is one of them.
Yeah.
It's insane.
The third quarter he had was just so fun to watch live, so fun to just kind of see him start getting going. Because when he gets going, he has that sense where he's like Lillard in the sense where then when one of them gets going, they both just know, okay, I am going to get to this spot, I'm going to make my shot. And they just get there, and they just have this ability to get that shot off. I mean, even last night, we talked about a little bit how it's hard to stay in front of him. Kristaps stayed in front of him at one point and got him trapped in the corner and did a really great job of pinning him in the corner. And Kyrie just got that three off somehow and made it. And I really have no idea how he made that shot.
The Kristaps held his own okay. I think he switched on to LeBron twice. And they got one basket out of it. Like, LeBron is so good, that's going to happen. The couple times he got switched on to Kyrie, so there was two times Kyrie like blew right by him, and that one time he described, he stayed with them, and Kyrie was just like, okay, that's fine, I'm just gonna make it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he when you catch Kyrie at those moments where he is just going off, like, it's just so hard to make it through. And I imagine if you're Rose or if you're anyone defending him, that's gotta be so demoralizing too, especially if you you pushed all the way back in the first half a little bit. And Kyrie did, you know, it was okay in the first half. And then when you just have a guy just keep getting buckets on top of buckets, that has got to be demoralizing if you're a team that's trying to compete and start off your season in a really good way. I mean, the Knicks, they're only down, I think, three going into the half, and then the Cavs outscore them by 15 in the third quarter, 11 in the fourth, and then we get the score that we have. And it was very, very close a little bit in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs, again, they opened up that lead, and, you know, it got, I think, to 12 at one point in the second quarter. The Knicks wound up cutting it to three by halftime. It was sort of strange that they were able to do that, you know, given the way the first quarter went. The Cavs, again, they missed a bunch of shots that they would normally make. And the Knicks, to their credit, they went on a really nice run in the middle of the second quarter. Justin Holiday had back-to-back threes off passes from Carmelo, which was what really sort of cut the lead down from close to double digits to, I think, four.
Yeah.
And then it sort of stayed around that for the rest of the half.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think of Tristan Thompson? He's a guy who I thought he would be able to have a good game against the Knicks, and I don't think he showed up in my notes for the game once.
No, he didn't for me either. You know, I mentioned Shump as the guy that really stood out as not playing well for Cleveland, and I'm not going to say Tristan played bad, but he didn't really necessarily play good. I don't know if it was Noah. Yeah. I don't know if it was Porzingis. I don't know if he's just a little bit out of sorts for some reason, but, I mean, he 22 minutes last night. Did make a field goal. I believe he was actually the only Cav who didn't score. Only six rebounds. I mean, Love had 12, LeBron had 11, so there wasn't like he caused him to have this issue on the boards, but he just wasn't the same effective type of Tristan Thompson that I think we've seen. He usually does pretty well against Noah. Noah's bulky and stuff, but
with you know, a lot of his strength as a defender is pick and roll defense. You know, the Knicks ran a bunch of it, but a lot of that was just Rose or Jennings looking for their own shot.
Yeah.
And Tristan's ability to sort of corral and force guys into, you know, awkward passing and stuff like that doesn't show up as much when guys are just coming around a screen and going right to the basket. He's sort of just staying with them and making the shot a little bit harder. So it was difficult, I think, to notice what he did in box score or in, like, wow, look at that great defense right there, because he was sort of just riding these guys around the picks into the basket and letting them try to finish oversize.
Yeah, and that's something I think to watch with this Cavs defense, because they, as it stands right now, you look at the roster, there's not a traditional rim protector on this team. You have Thompson, you have Love up front, so you're not really going to get any shot blockers there. Channing Frye is a solid team defender, but he's never going to swat shots. And then you have Birdman Anderson, maybe your most traditional old school type of center, but he's not a shot blocker either. He's just kind of a very smart team defender, and he's older. So
LeBron is the best rim protector. It's sort of constructed similarly to those Miami teams where, you know, you have guys that move around really well, but not necessarily anyone that's going to shut you down at the rim.
Right. And I don't think it's a glaring weakness if you're the Cavs, but maybe the Knicks are hinting at something that teams will attack. If LeBron, especially if it's not where LeBron's off, or if LeBron's off the floor, or whatever you scenario is, if let's say it's Kyrie Irving and your point guard, let's say you're the Pistons and you have Reggie Jackson when he's healthy and you have Andre Drummond, and let's say it's Kyrie and Thompson in that matchup, that's a way you attack the spine of that defense. You have a guy who's a very good finisher in Drummond. Jackson, I'm not super high on, but he's a decent point guard. Maybe that's a recipe for success against a defense that is generally going to be pretty solid.
Yeah, I would think that their defense is going to be good, and I thought they did a good job for the most part of tracking the shooters on the perimeter. It's difficult to tell because there wasn't necessarily that whip around passing that you would like to see to test that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they really lost anybody that much, with the exception of, you know, the back to back Kristaps threes in the third quarter. And then there was a really nice set that the Knicks ran to get Kristaps a three in the second quarter as well, with Carmelo screening for him, and then Kristaps sort of popping out in like a bunch screening action, which was nice. Those were the only times really, and you know, Cornelia was left alone once also, I think, that the Cavs really lost track of anybody on the perimeter.
Yeah, I'll ask you this as we kind of get towards the end here. When you look at how the Knicks defended LeBron, obviously they were going to have some issues that we talked about when we previewed this game, but he took three threes, but he never seemed to have a guy looking straight at him or straight on him when he was on the perimeter if he was not didn't have the ball in his hand. Do you think that was an intentional defensive decision by the Knicks?
Yeah, I think it's a factor of they don't really have, you know, Lance Thomas accepted, and Lance Thomas I think also was a guy who had a rough game. Mm-hmm. They don't have a perimeter defender with size that's really going to test LeBron. You know, Carmelo can physically hang with him a little bit, but doesn't have the foot speed or necessarily the tactical defensive awareness to cause problems for LeBron in a way that somebody who's not quite as big, even like Andre Iguodala, can do. You know, Courtney Lee spent some time on LeBron. At one point, I think in the third quarter, they used Derrick Rose on LeBron, and LeBron just sort of backed his ass right down and got a free little layup in the middle of the paint. So that to me is not necessarily a tactical decision, but a factor of, you know, them not really having anyone that's equipped to guard him in any way whatsoever.
Yeah. I'm right with you on that.
Yeah. It's look, it's a problem that I'd say like 26 or 27 teams have.
Yeah, it's not something that's unique to that situation. I mean, there are very few teams that I think are equipped to do that type of play, that type of defense, because you just need these sort of unicorn personnel types. And those guys are hard to find. They're really even harder to develop.
Exactly. So look, I mean, it was a very encouraging night for the Cavs, and it was a not so encouraging night for the Knicks. You know, the Cavs will have their struggles at some point this year. Probably. The Knicks will have their good times at some point this year, probably. You know, we'll see, but it's very similar to a lot of other games. It's one game. The Cavs, I don't want to say they're not as good as they looked, because they might be, but they're not going to play that well every night. The Knicks are not as bad as they look. They're not going to play that poorly every night. You know, 81 more of these to go, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. It'll be. I mean, I expect the Cavs maybe like Saturday when they play the Magic, just to have their first. That's the real test. It's their first back to back. It's the first back to back where they'll have to travel from a game the previous night and then play at home the next day. That's the test of, I think, the first test of how they're gonna approach those type of games. So Saturday maybe is that first game where they're just kind of gonna take it off.
Yeah, I mean, at least it's not in Orlando, so they're not hitting up that Orlando nightlife before the game. Although, you know, The Cleveland nightlife's getting pretty crazy right now. They might go to an Indians game and get drunk again.
Yeah, I mean, they reasonably could. I hope they're there. I don't know if they were at the stadium for game two, but they might as well, you know? I mean, and especially because there's a couple weeks, like, Jay-Z's going to be in Cleveland. LeBron, they have to travel that night, but LeBron is totally going to that concert. Like, they're just going to enjoy themselves until, like, March.
And look, they should. They should enjoy themselves throughout the year. They're going to do a whole lot of winning. And it's going to be fun for all the people in Cleveland. I'm sure we'll talk again at some point throughout the season. So, Chris, I'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the rest of the Cavs games this week and anything else that you might watch.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. You too. I don't know if you have a rooting interest in the World Series or if you're going to get to watch some non-Knicks basketball, but hope you can find something that'll pique your interest a little bit.
I'm certainly going to watch some non-Knicks basketball in these next few nights. Obviously, I do cover the whole league. World Series-wise, I just think the Cubs are really cool.
And they're really good.
I love Francisco Lindor because I traded for him early in my fantasy baseball season this year, and he helped me win the championship. But then again, so did Chris Bryant, so I got split loyalties there.
Lindor wears a custom Space Jam jersey before a lot of the games, though, so I think that's a good tiebreaker.
that's pretty awesome. I'll definitely be on the lookout for that, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jared. And now we're going to hop right into the mailbag portion of our podcast. As I said at the top of the show, you can always drop questions to me on Twitter at CWMWrites, to LockedOnCavs on Twitter, and to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Next week, we'll probably do one of these on Monday as we normally would after the Raptors and Magic games over the weekend. So make sure you get your questions in. Always appreciate your questions. They've been great. We get more and more every week, which is awesome. So please keep sending them in, because I will gladly answer whatever questions you guys may have. So we're going to hop right into this. So first up, Perry Kellis says, who would win in a one-on-one game of one-on-one, Cade Felder or Matthew Dellavedova?
I'm going to say deadly, but that's for right now. He's bigger. He can dribble enough to score in those situations, and he's just a bigger, more physically advanced guy at this point. Deli isn't exactly old by any means, but Feather's just starting on the league. Deli's been in the league a couple of years, and so he gets the advantage there. The size advantage to me is pretty big, because Deli can hound two guards. He's big enough to hound two guards. That's going to give him a big advantage in any kind of hypothetical one-on-one game. Feather's probably a better athlete, though, which would give him a chance. Perry asked another question. Do you think during the regular season, maybe versus the Golden State Warriors, the Cavaliers that Love wouldn't be the best option to win a championship, especially in a matchup versus the Warriors? I'm going to say no, and here's why. One, they beat the Warriors last year, and I think at least for now, as long as everything stays relatively stable, I think you will see the Cavs sort of stick with what works for the most part. That doesn't mean you won't see some tweaks. We've already seen Love is running with the bench units now. They have Dunleavy instead of Matthew Dellavedova, obviously, and there's a few other little tweaks that we're seeing, but I know that's a pretty big one. The other side of this is that you don't trade a guy who is maybe struggles versus one team when he's really going to help you against the other 29 teams in the league. In the Eastern Conference, Kevin Love is a player who can help tilt series in the Cavs' favor. Even if you could get these unicorn type wings you want, trading him is not a very easy decision. He's still really good, very good rebounder. He looked really, really good in the season opener. And I don't think you want to do that. I think if you're going to look at how the Cavs would improve to hypothetically rematch Golden State or play them in a third matchup, it would be them trying to get an upgrade on the wing to supplement Shumpert and Jefferson and Dunleavy off the bench and to beef up things there. And I don't know if trading Love is worth it because you'd be pretty thin up front then. I mean, if you think about it, if you trade Love, Thompson and Fry and Birdman are the only bigs on your roster. That's not really going to cut it. And, you know, I know Love has had not a great 2 years. He's been problematic at times, and there's been all these issues, but you won a title. I think they are... I really think that Tyronn Lue changed really emboldened Love to be more aggressive and get the ball. And I think that's only going to help them and help him as this continues. Ashwin Kumar says, who would take the final three roster spots? So before I get the rest of his question, that was obviously Liggins, McRae, and the full roster that we've seen. Can you also elaborate in terms of what this team might need to add to make their bench even more stronger because it's complete? Is it a good idea to keep a spot open for the trade deadline at midseason? So we'll start with the first part of that. I would say if this team's going to need anything, I think it's a wing. I know a lot of you have asked about backup point guards and asked about if the Cavs need to go get Mario Chalmers or something, and I think there is a reasoning to get a guy like that because if you look at how Shumpert played, I think you maybe need a guy to handle the ball with Love, but the wing is a bigger issue because when it comes to the playoffs, when the season's going to get really real, you can stagger Kyrie and LeBron enough where you maybe don't even play that guy a lot. You may still want to get one. It's maybe not a bad idea, but I don't think it makes the most sense to say backup point guard is the biggest need for this team. I think the biggest need is in the wing because you need a lot of wings who can defend and shoot against Golden State. If you play them in the finals, that means you need guys who can do just a lot of different things. And yeah, that those guys are harder to find. Getting those guys is a lot easier said than done. But you need to go get that kind of guy maybe if you're going to make a deal. If you're going to make a deal, that's kind of the thing you have to do. Is that a Trevor Ariza via trade exception? Is that PJ Tucker? Is that, whoever it might be. There are options for sure, but it's all about getting a guy on the wing if you can find that guy. In terms of the open roster spot, with the trade deadline, they don't really need to keep a roster open because they could just trade somebody and it could work out that way. The roster spot is interesting because Mo Williams is taking one up right now, and he's going to be off the roster at some point. I just assume that's the case. He's on the roster. He's going to be listed as inactive every game until he's officially off the roster. On opening night, they literally said, thank you for guys who aren't here, Mo Williams, Timothy Mozgov, Matthew Dellavedova. He's not coming back. So there kind of technically is a spot they can start planning for. I think maybe if you want to go hunt a guy like, McRae type from the D League, you could do that. Dante Jones you could bring back, I guess. I wouldn't mind some of the guys that have been waived recently, which we'll get into in a little bit, but you know, it's, I don't think it matters all that much. I think it's an okay idea, but there are worse sort of scenarios, I think, than having the roster full right now, especially because, again, Mo Williams is going to be off the books. Robbie Strock asked, who will be the breakout all-star of 2016-17? So I'm going to answer this in an interesting way. There's a lot of guys, I think, that are going to get obvious recognition. I think, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is one. I think there's a lot of young guys like that that are going to have these big years. That are going to be Chris Porzingis. That are going to have these big years. I'm going to give you three guys that I'm excited about. And there are definitely guys whose names you're going to know, but that's not, you know, I don't think an indictment on them just because they're known. First up, D'Angelo Russell. I'm not sure he's going to be an all-star this year, kind of what the question's asking, but I think he's going to be really, really good. He's had a great preseason. He's more poised. He's not playing with Kobe anymore, so he can really kind of be himself. If you go listen to the Woj vertical podcast with him, he really talked about he feels freer now without Kobe, to paraphrase, so that's kind of worth noting. And he's playing under a really good coach in Luke Walton. Now, the Walton can't implement everything he did in Golden State with the Lakers, but he can kind of give some of those Curry-type things in that offense to D'Angelo to do. He's not going to do them as well as Curry, but I think he's going to be really good. He's a skilled scorer. He's under a smart coach. They should be better, at least more fun and functional this year, even if their records aren't better. I'm a fan of D'Angelo Russell quite a bit. Next week, you know, Steven Adams is already pretty great. If you watch the Thunder in the playoffs, I think you know how good this guy can be and how good he is and how important he is and was to the Thunder. But I think without KD there, I think he's one of the guys that's really going to benefit from a shadow there. I think we're going to see him maybe be the second best player on that team behind Russ. At worst, he's the third best player behind him and Oladipo. And I think he's such a good center, so skilled, very physical, a good rim protector, just everything you want out of a modern center who is still very strong and can handle himself, and he's just the toughest guy. I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard the stories about him getting a migraine and just like being like, yeah, I gotta play, whatever, and like, I'm terrible with migraines. I would have slept all day if I was him, and he played in a high-intensity playoff game. Like, Steven Adams is a badass, and I think he's gonna be great this year. Number three is Andrew Wiggins. I'm a huge Wiggins guy. For one, I think he's just insanely athletic. I think the skill set is there for him to be this two-way wing who attacks off the dribble, can shoot some threes, and now that he doesn't have Sam Mitchell kind of forcing him into these shoehorned long twos anymore. And there's just a lot to like about Wiggins. I think Tom Thibodeau is going to bring the best out of him.
Look, I wrote about him not too long ago at Fansided, so you can go check that out on him. I think he's key to their success this year, and I think he's going to be a very, very special guy with the Wolves. I'm huge on Andrew Wiggins. Next, from JimRun85, who in your opinion is the best player wave so far that the Cavs could pick up? Please don't say Jarrett Jack. And who is your best guess as to who the Cavs are after in these trade rumors? Jimmy Nelson makes a lot of sense in my opinion. So I would say that R.J. Hunter would have made a lot of sense, but he's going to the Bulls per a couple different reports, so he's off the table. Archie Goodwin would make some sense too, but the roster's sort of full, and I do think Archie Goodwin could be a backup point guard for the Cavs if that's where they want it to go. It certainly wouldn't cost them any of their actual assets. As far as trade rumors go, I don't really know. It's interesting because they don't have a roster spot, and they don't really have any assets to really make a big move. So I'm having a hard time really connecting the dots. I know there was the Patrick Beverley thing the other day, and he would be ideal, but I think that's a little bit of a dream scenario there. And I think you'd be kind of reaching for guys right now. I think I don't know what a Shump Mo Williams or McRae Mo Williams deal really does. I'm not sure any of the Cavs' picks are actually make that a more valuable thing. I'm just not sure what the Cavs actually offer to get somebody of actual value. Tyus Jones is not going to cut it if you want to get a backup point guard for this team. So I'm not sure. I think RJ Hunter would have been great, and I think a guy like that makes sense. I know he hasn't really been a good shooter since he came into the league in the limited minutes he's played, but in theory, he's a guy you could get, and I liked him coming out of college. So We'll have to see how he turns out in Chicago. It's hard to say who they're going to get if they make a deal. I just don't know what you're actually going to get for what they actually really have to offer. And as always, I would just say temper your expectations about your own, the guys that they are rooting for. So we're going to get two more questions. They're both from Perry Kellis, who asked just great questions. With the Shrump rumors around, what would be the best return for the Cavs? I hear the Timberwolves are interested, and I think Rubio, but we lose a defensive wing we just can't lose. What are your thoughts on it? I'll say this again. You're not going to get a lot for Shrump. You're just not going to get much for a guy who had his worst season last year, has an injury history, and there's just a lot of concerns about what he is. Rubio would be great. Patrick Beverley would be great, but I don't think you're getting anybody of that level. So we'll have to see. I'm just not sure what the Cavs are going to get that actually results in them getting someone of the caliber that I think a lot of Cavs fans really want. And then Perry asked about RJ Hunter, so he says, RJ was waived by the Celtics. Do you think he's a good player for the Cavs to develop if McCray is traded? I would have liked him either way, but again, Shams Charina of the Vertical has it going to the Bulls. Cavs roster is full. RJ Goodwin, again, would be a guy that would make a lot of sense. We have people on the Fear the Sword site that are huge fans of his, so maybe one of those guys would make sense. So that's all the questions we have for the day. Thank you guys for asking those. I've saved one that came in this cycle that I'm going to save for next week. It'll be a little bit more relevant then. So if you didn't hear a question answered, maybe it's that one I'm getting next week. As always, please submit questions to Locked On Cavs on Twitter, to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at CDipMyRights. Thanks again to Jared Dubin, who you can find on Twitter at JADubin5. And like us on Facebook too. Go give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Thanks again to Bethy SI for sponsoring this podcast. So this has been Chris Manning. This has been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow.